Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome to the Whiskey Congress pre-draft preview, whatever you want to call it.
I think it's the Whiskey Congress draft preview is what you're looking for.
Is that what I said? What did I say? Pre-draft, Whiskey Congress,
I don't know.
Whatever.
You made it, all right. But it's fine. Anyway, we got it.
So I am in lovely Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Steven is back home in Cleveland, Ohio. I am drinking New Belgium Citradelic IPA, a beer that we are both fans of, but there is no whiskey in my side of town. What are you drinking, brother?
I have a, I've got a Coors Light, and then as a backup, I have a Highland Park 18.
You son of a gun.
Yeah. So like the one side of my mouth is a very sophisticated,
See what basic
higher,
bitch
higher,
and then
higher brow, you know, higher brow, sort of party going on. And then there's just the, your typical Monday night tailgate.
Look, the mountains are blue. The beer is cold.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an aluminum can. The mountains are indeed blue. The beer is indeed cold. So we are ready to kick this thing off. So we both did a mock draft, which both drafts are up on our site. You can find them at whiskeycongress.com. Also, facebook.com/whiskeycongress or look for us on Twitter. At Whiskey Congress, but you can find Jim did one. I did a separate one, and we'll just jump right into it. We'll go through our first top 10 picks. That's where really a lot of the kind of melodrama is. And then after we get through the top 10, Jim, if you want to just kind of go through some highlights, maybe some surprises in my mock draft that you saw or vice versa. And then obviously talk about our own specific teams. And then just kind of talk about the draft in general.
Sounds good. So I have Sam Darnold going to the Browns number one overall. My reasoning is that I think the Haslams love Sam Darnold. They came out there. Unlike every other team in the draft, they really don't have a reason to throw deception out there because they've got the number one. And they, don't have to worry about what anyone else is doing. You disagree with me.
I do. And so I think that when you look at John Dorsey, who's the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, he's coming from Kansas City. Last year, John Dorsey could have drafted a Deshaun Watson, and he opted to trade back into the first round, skip Deshaun Watson, and draft Pat Mahomes out of Texas Tech, who didn't come from a conventional offense. Is known as kind of a gunslinger. He's got Mahomes has a big arm, threw some interceptions. So there's, he could have went with the safe pick, but opted for a guy who was a little bit more non-traditional. And I could see him looking at the Browns and looking at the situation, diagnosing what they need from a football perspective, not falling in love with the analytics, what the safe pick is. He's looking for a guy who can get the Browns. I mean, the Browns are 1-31 over the last two seasons. And so there's a possibility that instead of going with the safe pick, which is Darnold, you know, everybody likes him. He's kind of like Mitchell Trubisky, like last year, maybe a little bit more upside than Mitchell Trubisky. You okay over there?
I'm there. Yeah. Sorry. I moved my phone.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Steven showed up on the...
You know, but other than, you know, I mean, I think, you know, when I look at Sam Darnold, I see a guy who, from a winning percentage, he had an average winning percentage over the course. Typically, I think they went about 8-5 or 8-6 or so. Maybe they won a few more games this year. I think they went, 9-9?
I don't have that in front of me.
9-4, 9-3. But, I look at that. I watched him play a number of games, just staying up late, getting to watch the games on the West Coast. He played against Ohio State in the bowl game. And I looked at a kid, and he's a competitor, but I watched him throw a lot of interceptions that I didn't see the other guys throw. And he also fumbled the ball a lot more. Like I noticed it early in the season. And even in the middle of the season, I noticed that he would get, you know, the strip sack where the guy comes up from, and, you know, applies pressure from behind, you know, strips the ball away from him, or he's trying to run away. And right as he's about to make, you know, bring his arm up to pass, he gets stripped. And you just wonder if the guy's got that clock in his head that he's going to need. And if you think the guys are fast in the Pac-12, when you get to the NFL, they're going to be that much faster. And so that clock that, you know, his clock's already slow in college, and it's going to need to speed up, you know, a pretty decent amount when he gets to the pros. So I just think I see Darnold. Everyone says he's the safe pick because he said all the right things. He's done all the right things. That's great. But I think that they maybe say, well, let's take the guy who wins and we know can play, even though there's some you know, strikes against him as well.
So I hear what you're saying. I don't think the Browns deviate on Darnold. I actually happened to be in my hotel room out here over the last 2 days, and I got to watch some ESPN was playing a lot of Wyoming games to highlight Josh Allen, and a lot of USC games to highlight Sam Darnold. And I watched Sam Darnold against Oregon and against Stanford last night, or today actually, at lunchtime, the second part of that. And I see why teams like him. I mean, he does sling it when he slings it. I don't see the Browns going away from Darnold. And here's my other thought. If they want Mayfield, I don't think they're afraid to go a different route with the first pick. And that kind of leads into our both second pick. So we both have Saquon Barkley going to the Giants with pick two. And we for the same reason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Giants are even really hiding it at this point. And I think it's obviously that's what they need. You know, I mean, Eli's getting older. You know, you had the whole thing where Ben McAdoo benched him, which I'm so glad that guy, I don't have to look at that guy in his fucking
I remember
New
I was
Balance
talking
shoes
about this last show with the hairdo. Oh my gosh.
Back hair.
Yes.
Like everything about that guy just rubbed me the wrong way. Like you could just tell he was in over his head from like just looking at him. And then the way the team performed, you know, kind of solidified it. But the reality is Eli is on the tail end of his career.
Sure.
Way.
37.
And so, you know, which is crazy because we're the same age. But Eli's at the tail end of his career. He's going to and he has always performed at his best when he's had a running game, period. You know, when they had Ron Dane and Tiki Barber, when Brandon Jacobs was there, you know, short bursts with, you know, a few other guys who had, you know, who showed a little potential, but that's always when Eli Manning is at his best, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And I say, frankly, what quarterback doesn't benefit from having a running game that bails them out?
Right. I mean, there's some where they just, I mean, you know, I mean, like Drew Brees
surely
has
sure.
a full complimentary running game.
Tom Brady has had up and
you know,
out,
Tom but... Brady. Right. I mean, like, so I guess what I'm saying though is, I think the Giants are looking at it like especially after last year, we owe it to Eli to give him what he needs to succeed. Let's get a young, talented, you know, stud running back in here to help with that. We already have Odell Beckham Jr. You know, I think maybe they go for a tight end in the, you know, early, maybe the second round, possibly the third round. Because you know there's some decent depth at the tight end position that may be there for them, and now you look at what they have at receiver already. You bring in an effective running game. You give them a good safe target at tight end, and all of a sudden the New York Giants are very competitive again. You know, going from picking second to possibly one of the teams that could theoretically be contending for the NFC East. So,
I agree with you. With that part, my only disagreement is if they my disagreement with you is with the Browns pick. If they want Baker Mayfield, I think they believe they can get him at four if they take Saquon Barkley for the same logic.
And I fully agree with, except for the fact that I think just trying to get in the head of John Dorsey. John Dorsey is a guy like, listen, that's my guy, right? Like, I'm picking at the top of the draft. I'm going to get the quarterback for the future. That's the guy that I want. I'm going to go get him now, period.
Okay.
You know, right. I mean, I pull the trigger on him now, and that's it. Because there's a possibility someone may look at it and say, oh, he's there, and they take, you know, you could theoretically see the Jets take, you know, you could see the Jets take a Baker Mayfield at 3, where some have projected him to go, and he's not there for you at 4.
Okay.
You know, I mean, yeah. And so there's, you know what I mean? And then it's just like, all right, well, so now what do you do? And I don't, you know, I mean, and again, that's my shot. I'm calling it out there. Here locally on the radio, there's been a lot of buzz about Baker Mayfield. You know, today it's, you know, it's funny. My mock draft came out technically this morning. Obviously, I wrote it last night. But, you know, when I was on my way to work this morning, you know, all the buzz on the shows was that there was Adam Schefter reported that the Browns are heavily considering.
Right. I heard
Baker
that
Mayfield. It's down to Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. So I don't think that I'm necessarily too far off base.
Oh, I'm not saying you're. I'm not saying you're and way off base.
And I won't be. Listen, I won't be surprised not one bit if they take Sam Darnold. But I mean, it's a mock, and I think that, you know, trying to get in someone's head and overthink it, I think that I'm overthinking that they go with Baker Mayfield.
I and you and I have talked about this, I think, a little bit on the show and definitely a ton off the air, that Baker Mayfield has that, you know, guy who brings it vibe. You know, I was in your living room.
Listen, if the kid were 6'3" and a quarter,
he's number one. No doubt.
He's hands down number one. No, it's not even a debate.
And 2 inches of height shouldn't change that much, but in this world, it does.
I think it shouldn't, but I mean, and I think that we're starting to see, you know, because a lot of people have been talking about Pete Carroll and why he started Russell Wilson that year over Tavares Jackson, because he looked at it and he said the reason why they drafted him is because they looked at him and said, man, if Russell Wilson were 3 or 4 inches taller, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. He'd be a top 10 quarterback. And so they draft him in the 3rd round or whenever they got him.
Yeah, 3rd.
And then they are looking at him in camp, and they're like, well, he's playing better, but the reason why we're not playing him is because he's not tall enough. And then it's just like, well, if he can do it all in practice and he can do it all in these different scenarios, why can't he do it in a game? And so ultimately that's what, you know, Pete Carroll said, all right, fine. I'm going to put him in a game. I can't believe that 3 inches is going
to
make a difference.
Right, and they had signed Matt Flynn out of Green Bay to a huge contract.
You know what? That's who it was. It was Matt Flynn. I said Tavares Jackson.
Okay, I wasn't trying to one-up you. I was wondering if he was on the team as well.
Yeah, and I think Tavares Jackson was in that mix, but it was Matt Flynn who was.
They paid a ton of money to who never got on the field.
They had crowned him the, you know, the official. They had crowned him the starter.
The free agent signing.
Because they had got him and he had been the backup, and, you know, they thought they were going to catch lightning in a bottle twice, kind of like an Aaron Rodgers type deal. And come to find out that they just, this kid that they got in the 3rd round for a fraction of the cost was the better player. And ultimately it ended up being the right decision. They went to 2 Super Bowls. They won one, should have won, really should have won a second.
Two, yeah.
Had they taken it
hand
off
the ball
of,
to Marshawn.
Right.
Or
had
better yet,
off of
fake
Russell
the hand
Wilson
off and
shoulders.
Roll him out. But anyway,
they could, you're right. They had a couple different options there and they didn't do it. So either way, but that worked out for them. And I think you look at that, you look at the success of a guy, of a Drew Brees, and you say, do I have to wait to take him just because he's not as tall? Or if that's my guy, do I just take him so that we're not sitting there looking at it saying, man, we could have had him, but we didn't take him because he was 3 inches too short. And now we've got Sam Darnold, who is incredibly boring and very nice, but can only win 8 games a season. And they've got Baker Mayfield. They've gone to the AFC Championship. They've gone to a Super Bowl. And, you know, we're still stagnant.
All right. So this is one of the areas where our mocks differ, because I have Baker Mayfield falling to 11 and breaking my heart because he doesn't make it to the Bills. Your mock essentially has Josh Allen falling to 11 and then getting cut off before the Bills.
Well, and I think that speaks to a broader thing that the Dolphins are going to take a quarterback over Ryan Tannehill. Now, you're jumping over picks
a lot,
four,
yeah.
five, through six, ten, seven, yeah. eight, nine, is it, all right, ten. Is it,
what do you want to talk about there?
Well, okay, so what you're saying is that, well, because we have some pretty big differences. So at four, we both have the Browns taking, or well, we both have the Jets taking Josh Rosen, right?
Right.
Right. And I mean, Josh Rosen is a very kind of cerebral guy. You know, I do want to talk about this. So there are people who have been downgrading Josh Rosen because they said, well, he's got other interests besides football. His family is very wealthy. You know, his coach said that you have to keep his attention, otherwise he gets bored. Mind you, his coach is Jim Mora Jr., right? Who, by all accounts, is not a very good coach.
Well, but right? also, hold on. Jim Mora Jr. didn't say he gets bored. He says that Josh Rosen asks questions. I saw an interview with Jim Mora Jr. yesterday where he said, I didn't mean that as an insult. I meant to say, excuse me, that he's a guy who will question and challenge things, and that as a younger guy, he doesn't just do the, you know, yes or no, sir thing. And according to Jim Mora Jr., he did not mean that as an insult. It was more of a, hey, this kid thinks and he wants to understand.
I heard Jim Mora say that you have to keep Josh Rosen's interest.
Okay.
I heard him say that on an interview on the NFL Network. So, okay, fine. My whole point is, I'm not this whole idea. Okay, if this is true that NFL coaches are actually downgrading this guy, because he asked too many questions, because he's rich, because he's got interest in politics and interest in social justice, and you know, like, because a lot of people, maybe this guy should be running for senator, not playing football. If you're downgrading guys because of that, I don't buy it. Because I mean, like, look how many. I mean, look what Chris Long did. I mean, Chris Long donated his entire salary to charity, this year. You know, Malcolm Jenkins is involved in all sorts of different social justice things off the field. You know, you don't want to use Kaepernick because he's not in the league
right.
because of his social justice stuff. But there are other players who have plenty of things going on. Every player has to have some sort of charity foundation that their name is tied to. You know, these guys have other interests. The league has a number of different programs to push these guys into something else, so that they don't have all these stories of, you know, guys going broke after the league and things like that, and suicide and depression. So I don't buy this whole thing that we're downgrading Josh Rosen because he's already got those things built in. But I do buy it that teams are using it as a smoke screen to try to impact other teams and how they view a guy like a Josh Rosen. And I also don't buy the whole thing, well, he's rich and he doesn't have the blue-collar attitude. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, their father played professional football. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
There's a lot of, you know what I mean? Like, and like, they're both like, neither one of those guys had to work a hard day in their life other than just like playing football. You know, I mean, and they said the same thing about Peyton Manning, about how charismatic and, you know, democratic he was. So I don't buy the thing with Josh Rosen. I think that he's a solid player. He's silky smooth with the ball. And I think that teams are talking shit about him so that someone can maybe jump up and grab him earlier than anticipated.
My concern with Josh Rosen is he had two concussions last year, and he is smart enough, and his family and he are secure enough to not need the game to the point where he could take a couple of hits and say, I don't need this. Which I would not blame him for a second.
Yeah, but I mean, so then your issue is with, you know, so it's an injury concern.
Right. Which is ugly, but you know, it's real.
We're at a point now where a lot of guys are, if they get one too many concussions or if they take a really hard hit, like that's more and more of a concern for a lot of players, especially the young players coming into the league who are a little bit more socially conscious and just aware.
And in Rosen's case, his dad's like a neurosurgeon.
What's that?
In Rosen's case, his dad, I think, is a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, so there's a guy who's going to say, hey, kid, don't do this shit anymore, is going to be that guy.
Right. And so,
and I don't blame him. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, if I'm a team, do I want to pick a guy who's got the good sense to say, after 3 years, I don't need this shit?
And so you have to balance that. It's still, from a football perspective, it's still a criticism, right?
I mean, right,
you're basically going to, you're basically going to the injury card.
Yeah.
And so what? And so you have to go to him and say, listen, what's, I mean, what is the likelihood that if you take a hard hit and it scares you, doesn't necessarily give you a concussion, are we going to have concerns? Are we going to have to be concerned about the fact that you may decide to walk away from the game, you know, 2 years into a 4-year contract? Yeah. And those are questions that you legitimately should ask if you're a coach, to see his reaction, gauge his reaction. You know, and I don't have a problem with that, and that doesn't violate anything if you ask him, because some of these coaches and teams have been known to ask some really ridiculous questions and offensive and illegal questions that the league should do something about, crack down on these teams harder. But asking a guy like, hey, if you get another concussion or if you are hit hard, is there a chance that you may walk away? And you ask that question strictly to see his reaction, to make sure that he doesn't, one, just let it out and say, yeah, I'll turn and burn immediately. Or, you know, to see that it doesn't trip him up to the point where you have legitimate concerns. He should be able to, even if he's lying through his teeth, he should be able to convince you that he won't do that.
Agreed. All right. So there's Josh Rosen.
And then so we both have Bradley Chubb out of North Carolina State going to Cleveland. You know, I debated a little bit there. I mean, that could have been because the Browns need, again, they need a lot of help. They're a team that's gone 1-31 over the last two seasons. They haven't been in the playoffs since maybe 2006. So they need a lot of help. There's a lot of holes. I think it makes sense to go with Bradley Chubb here. He's a big, athletic, strong, fast, smart, well, you know, well conditioned, well,
all right,
kind of built up player. And I think that you put him and Myles Garrett on the same, you know, on the same field on opposite ends of each other. And that could really be, you know, two cornerstones for a solid defense for the next few years. And the great thing is that, you know, because of the rookie wage scale, these, like, doing something like this doesn't have the same financial impact as it did before.
Right.
Ndamukong Suh got paid like $55 million from his rookie, you know, like just in bonus money alone. So, you know, like you couldn't do this before because you would have so much money tied up between your defensive line. If you took two defensive linemen back to back, like it really wouldn't be feasible. You have to spread that money throughout your team, whether it be all on offense or on defense or however you want to move it around. But now, because of the rookie wage scale, it doesn't have that same sort of impact to your team. So you can afford to draft two guys that high, play them, try to get the most out of them you can the first couple of years. And then if they both work out, then you may have to make a decision on one and not be able to keep both, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, so you'll have Garrett on a rookie deal for the next four seasons and Chubb for the next five. And the final year of that deal is not cheap, but it's not astronomical. And you are a Steelers fan, and you, as a Steelers fan, have to be thinking, that sounds scary. To have those two guys coming at your quarterback twice a year is not something that feels good.
Right. I mean, and that's a legitimate point. You know, I mean, like you got to play those guys twice a year. You know, last year we only saw flashes from Garrett. He was hurt a lot.
Right.
We'll see if that ends up being kind of a consistent thing or if he's able to fight through it and he comes through this year and he plays a full season. You know, we'll see what sort of impact he has. Because I don't think he played against the Steelers in the first game. He did play in the last game of the season, and I believe he did have a sack.
Did they open the season against the Browns last year?
The Steelers did open with the Browns last year.
All right, then he was definitely not on the field because he didn't come into like game four.
Yeah. So we'll see if they make that, if they pull that trigger, you know, and line those two guys up on opposite ends of each other, it really will be an interesting thing. And I've said this from, you know, I've been saying this for a long time, you know, since I've lived in Cleveland, I want to see the Browns do good. I have a very good friend who works for that organization. I have multiple friends who work for that organization, actually. And obviously living in Cleveland, for the city of Cleveland, I think for the Browns to be good would be even bigger than the Cavs being good. You know, I don't know if it'll reach, you know, obviously winning a championship is a pinnacle that the Browns aren't close to, but a competitive Browns team just generates so much good, positive energy, good karma, good vibes. It is a money driver for the city that I want to see that. Now, my thing is, I don't care if the Browns go 14-2, as long as those two losses are to the Steelers.
Right. You have a vested interest in the other direction.
Yeah. I mean, if the Browns, you know, I mean, and that's just my legitimate feeling. And so,
and that's sincere.
It will be interesting though to see what the Browns do there. I think that they do go with Chubb. I think that's a safe pick that everybody feels comfortable with. I just disagree on Darnold. And so that moves us to my number five, which is Denver, picking at number five. And then I have them taking Sam Darnold, because John Elway is picking over there for the Broncos. And I think he looks at it and says, all right, because in my draft, Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen are off the board. So that leaves him with his kind of, you know, guy who reminds him of himself. You know, Darnold is a bigger guy. He does have some athleticism to him. He's not the runner that John Elway was, which I think is interesting that John Elway usually gets left out of the running quarterbacks thing. But, I mean, John Elway was absolutely a running quarterback. But I think, you know, I think that they would – I think if Sam Darnold is there – they could pull the trigger on him, and because they have Case Keenum there, they would feel comfortable with him sitting and learning if they can get out of Case Keenum what they got out of him last year in Minnesota.
So my here's why you kind of said the same thing I thought, just we disagree on the logic, and that is that you're paying Case Keenum $18 million a year for 2 years, $18 million per year for 2 years. You have Paxton Lynch.
He's terrible.
He's delivered nothing so far, but he was also a John Elway choice. So for John Elway to give up on his golden boy, which logic might dictate, but not a lot of GMs have the self-reflection to deal with that.
But last year, that was Paxton Lynch's second year, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, John Elway, I think, like a lot of these guys, he has an ego, but he also knows that he needs someone to produce at that quarterback spot. And I don't think that they see Case Keenum as the future, but they see him as like a longer sort of bridge. And so you bring in a guy like a Sam Darnold, you let Case Keenum play out those 2 years, or maybe you let him play out a year and then see what happens in that second year. And then you go from there, because again, you're getting Sam Darnold at a discount. You're not even getting Sam Darnold at one. Now you're getting him at five, and you know what I mean? Like, it's not a huge difference, but it's
but it is a huge difference. You didn't give up extra capital to get him. I don't disagree with your logic. I disagree with your choice, but not your logic.
Right.
I think there the Broncos look at the fact that they have a depleted defensive backfield.
They traded away Aqib Talib.
And honestly, I'm an Ohio State fan. You're an Ohio State fan. I do think Denzel Ward is actually a bit overrated, but according to the GMs in the league, he's way up there. And so that's why I had Denzel Ward going at five to the Broncos. I don't see them taking a quarterback at that point. And part of the reason is I think there are guys later in the draft, in the second and third rounds, that might be development quarterbacks that the Broncos might say, you know what, we've got Keenum. We don't have to give up on Paxton Lynch yet. And maybe Mike White or Laletta from Richmond, or there's two or three other guys, are attractive, you know, as 2 and 3 year down the road guys. Luke Falk is another guy. So that's why I went there. It was, again, my logic. Neither of us are John Elway. But that's why I went where I did there.
Yeah, and so that makes sense too. And mine don't necessarily all make sense. I just think from my I shouldn't say that they don't make
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, I mean what you're saying is logical. It's maybe right. A different, thought process, but it's totally logical.
So at the number 6 pick, we have Indianapolis picking. I've got them taking Quentin Nelson. He's a guard out of Notre Dame.
I had that and I erased it and went to Minkah Fitzpatrick.
And I think I think they could go either way.
In fact, I even said Quentin Nelson would not be a surprise here in my description.
Yeah. And I think, the reason why, you got Andrew Luck's coming off an injury. He hasn't played in a year and some change. That offensive line wasn't great for Kobe Brissett last year, who played pretty good for them. And so you need to protect your quarterbacks. And so you go with the lineman here.
And he's considered the most locked in success at offensive line in this draft.
Yeah, he reminds you, he's not quite as athletic as a DeCastro. For the Steelers, but when DeCastro was coming out of Stanford, there was a lot of praise about him being ready to play, pretty much right out of the gate. And he was, he didn't get beat often. It's the guard position, so you're protected. But he's been, a staple in the Steelers offensive line since he was drafted. And I think Quentin Nelson could be the same sort of thing for the Colts, if they decide to take him. But you have them taking Minkah Fitzpatrick out of Alabama, who's just an all-around stud at defensive back, and they need that because their defense was awful and they gave up a lot of big pass plays.
Vontae Davis is gone from their defensive backfield, so they're one more hole in their defensive backfield, so that's why I went there.
Absolutely. All right. I've got Tampa Bay taking Minkah Fitzpatrick at number 7.
I've got them picking Derwin James, basically, because Minkah Fitzpatrick is gone.
Yeah, but either way, they need – they play in a division with Matt Ryan and Drew Brees and Cam Newton, and so they're going to need to be able to stop the pass. You've got, a number of different high-level receivers in that division, and so you need somebody who can cover them. It was an issue for them, and so it makes sense for them to kind of try to fill that hole at that number 7 spot. So, similar position, different player, we both are looking at it the same way.
Right, same mentality.
The Bears, this was a little bit tougher for me to kind of figure out which direction that they were going to go. I went with Roquan Smith here. He's a linebacker out of Georgia. They really haven't gotten that linebacker position solidified since, Urlacher and Briggs, retired. And so I could see them going with a Roquan Smith here, big, strong, athletic guy who, comes out of that Nick Saban defense. He comes out of that he's playing for Kirby Smart,
right,
who was Nick Saban's D coordinator, for all that time.
Right, right. I just wanted to make sure we didn't get misquoted.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. But Kirby Smart was a D coordinator for Nick Saban, and then he left to go to Georgia. And so I think you look at a guy like a Roquan Smith, and he could be there to help, shore up that defense, because your defense is going to have to be effective, because that their offense was brutal to watch last year with Mitchell Trubisky. He was a rookie, but it was, we'll kind of run the ball. They're not going to throw for more than 100 yards in a game. And if their defense can hold, then they have a chance to lose by 3.
Okay.
That was their offense last year. It was pretty rough. And so
I kind of chose the opposite. I said, protect him on the offensive line and went with Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame, saying give him a big offensive lineman who's considered to be a solid pick.
And I mean, the Bears have, you know, a couple solid running backs. And so, you know, getting someone there who can open up holes for those running backs, you know, that absolutely makes sense. But I was just looking at it thinking, like, man, that defense is going to need – they're going to need all the help that they can get if that offense doesn't get any better. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I think you're probably right on track with that. You know, going to San Francisco picking – I've got them taking Denzel Ward here at 9. I think that's a good place for him to go.
I got that. I was between defensive back and linebacker. Now I chose Roquan Smith for them. So obviously we will respect that guy's game.
Yeah. Yep. And so either way, I think it's defense for the 49ers. They need some help, but where they need help, you know, I mean, like they could, I mean, like they've got Pierre Garçon. You know, they could use a little bit more receiver help. You know, they can use some running back help, but they can get that, you know, later on in the draft. You know, running back Saquon Barkley was really the only guy that you probably had to take in the top 10. And the rest of the guys you will be able to get probably, you know, late in the first round, early in the second round. So San Francisco theoretically could try to trade back up into the first round if they wanted someone, or just wait and see who's around early in the second round when they're drafting.
So, oddly, we both have Tremaine Edmonds going to Oakland at 10.
That is interesting.
And so I think we had sort of the same idea in that you put someone – I mean, Tremaine Edmonds is 19 years old, and he is a physical monster. Mm-hmm. And you've got Khalil Mack, who I love because he came out of the University of Buffalo, and I'm – you know, Mr. Buffalo, and Khalil Mack is a superstar, but he's gonna, you know, command a huge contract, and Oakland and he are a bit at odds, and so I see Tremaine Edmonds as a guy who will come in. You put those two guys behind the front four, and you have just a terror zone behind your front four, and then if you can't make things work contractually with Khalil Mack, you've got the next version of him for the next 3 or 4 years. It seems we're on the same page there almost.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, like you just having two guys like that on the field shrinks the field for the offense. And then if Khalil Mack does go, by the time he goes, then Tremaine Edmonds should be ready to step in and take over. You know, from this point on, you know, that's the 10th pick. I think, you know, we talked about Miami taking a quarterback. I mean, I think that Ryan Tannehill has kind of gotten to a point where everyone's just like, listen, you need to get us into the playoffs and win. I think for Ryan Tannehill, he needs to basically get them to the divisional round of the playoffs and play very, very well if he wants to be back with Miami. Otherwise, they're going to go on to the next guy. And that's why I think that they take somebody at 11 to put pressure on him. And I have them taking Josh Allen, and you've got Baker Mayfield falling to them at 11.
Right. And I've got me going nuts saying, are we going to get Baker Mayfield? And my reasoning for that was because I do count on the traditional NFL brass being afraid of the 6'1" guy. And I totally agree with you. I think Baker Mayfield is the most exciting and highest potential and most likely successful quarterback prospect in this draft. So we agree on that. I just don't necessarily think that the powers that be in the NFL go with that. I have Baker Mayfield going 11, Josh Allen going at 12 to Buffalo. I don't love Josh Allen at 12. Well, I don't love Josh Allen as a quarterback of the future for any team, but I really don't love, now I'm switching to Buffalo mode, don't love the idea of Buffalo trading up to get him, which is getting projected all over sports media And you and I had this conversation the other day, and I was about to lose my mind. And I know you hate it when I fly off the handle because it's not entertaining to you at all. So that's my take. If Josh Allen falls to 12, I don't see the Bills passing on him. Honestly, if that does happen, I would rather see Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson as the Bills pick at 12. I don't think that'll happen, but that's what I would rather see in that order. I love Mason Rudolph. I know that they say his offense might have been a limited, scheme-based offense, but he threw for 47 touchdowns in a season. Talk about Big 12 all you want. 47 touchdowns in 1 year. And I like Lamar Jackson a lot, too, and I think in the short term, Lamar Jackson could be the more successful guy just because you can't deny his ability to make stuff happen when things break down. I mean, he is.
Well, I mean, and you put Lamar Jackson with LeSean McCoy, and I mean, you know, just
think of the pass run option with those two guys.
Exactly. I mean, and what's interesting is that when you think about the offense that Lamar Jackson played in, he played in Rick Pitino's offense. It's a Hold true on. Pro style.
You said Rick Pitino.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bobby Petrino.
Thank you.
Sorry.
One of those Italians.
Yeah, I mean, one of those Italian that coaches at Louisville.
So I'm not trying to be a dick. I just had to make sure that got
right. Yeah, no, that's my bad. But I mean, Bobby Petrino's offense is a legit pro style offense. I mean, the guy, everything about his coaching comes from the NFL. Lamar Jackson didn't play in a spread. He played in a pro style offense, and a lot of the complaint from a lot of the scouts and a lot of people watching were saying that Bobby Petrino probably should have given him a few more easier reads, should have gave him some more, screens and shorter passes, closer to the line of scrimmage instead of having to go downfield and read, three right. or four different reads.
Right.
But he didn't. And that's the offense that he played in. And the kid got better each year that he played. So, I think that there's a lot more upside to Lamar Jackson than, some people want to give him. They talk about his running, but Lamar Jackson, he's the type of guy who runs, who's looking to pass, but he can also, at that college level, he could just outrun everybody else or jump over them or whatever. And so that just was an added dynamic to his game that you'd be silly to take away. And so I think that whoever drafts him, and whoever drafts any of these guys, I should say, like, these coaches have got to get out of this frame of mind that it's their system that is successful. It's their genius that makes everything go. And start to design these offenses around these guys, right? Like, your West Coast offense, the offense that you came up with and designed 20 years ago when you were at Pacific Northwest State, yeah, it's great on paper, but the reality is you got to start to coach your guy and design around the skills that your guy has. So whether it's Hugh Jackson or it's
Frank Reich, coaching Carson Wentz. I think Carson Wentz's success was in large part because they said,
Frank
okay.
Reich and Doug Peterson, those guys both know that, like, listen, you got to go with what your guy can do if you want to win. You can't force a square peg into a round hole.
Or if you're the former offensive coordinator of the Bills, Rick Dennison, you can try, and you and your quarterback are both in a different place next year.
Well, yeah. I think
that's a criticism of Rick Dennison, but, I mean, I'll be curious to see what Tyrod does with Cleveland this year. It won't surprise me at all if the Browns draft a guy who they say, we're going to give you a year to learn or time to learn, and if Tyrod goes out there and succeeds, because he's never had Jarvis Landry, Josh Gordon, and Carlos Hyde, or potentially Saquon Barkley, talent around him.
Right. And remember, there's something, I don't know why I thought about this, but, you know, Terrell Pryor is still sitting out there unsigned.
I had also forgotten that.
Now, Terrell Pryor is sitting out there unsigned. He got hurt at the end of last year. You know, he took that 1 year deal with the Redskins, betting on him and Kirk Cousins having a big year.
Right.
And it didn't work out that way. Him and Kirk Cousins were never on the same page other than like maybe one preseason game. And so you can sign a guy like Terrell Pryor. Like, I mean, think about that, having Jarvis Landry, Terrell Pryor, Njoku and Josh Gordon all, you know, somehow on the same field. Or
you even left out Saquon Barkley, possibly. You didn't even say Saquon Barkley and Carlos Hyde.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can, I mean, but
Pryor's another piece. That's a lot of weapons.
Right. I mean, he's a big target that you could have there. And then if you've got Josh Gordon on one side, you've got Jarvis Landry in the slot, you've got Terrell Pryor at the other side, or you've got Njoku or whatever. I mean, like, there's so many.
It sounds terrifying, doesn't it?
You would be able to do. And then you have a guy like Carlos Hyde or a Duke Johnson who people forget about, who, you know, could gouge you. So, I mean, the team has potential, and you're right. Tyrod Taylor has never had anything like that. And so putting him in that position where he's got a relatively sure-handed Josh Gordon, he's got an absolutely sure-handed Jarvis Landry, he's got Njoku, who's not as sure-handed, but is a pretty high-level target, and they could have a pretty decent running game. You could see Tyrod Taylor really excel all of a sudden, and then really put the Browns in a quandary, because what if he does take the Browns to the playoffs next year?
Oh, I have proof that you can get to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor and then move on.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you were, I mean, last year, I mean, the Bills were what, 9-7
yeah.
or 10-6, and then
9-7. Yeah.
They got it. They were 9-7. They got in kind of on a thing, and you got your whole thing with Tyrod. But what I'm saying is that if we see Tyrod,
no, I was being snarky, but look, yeah, I like Tyrod,
and I'm punting on your snarkiness and just saying, listen, if the Browns were to somehow go, you know, 10-6, 11-5, you know, Tyrod Taylor. Well, no, but I'm saying if they go 10-6, 11-5, and they make the playoffs, and they're, you know what I mean, he plays out of his mind, that puts the Browns in a quandary, because you're going to have to play him again, right? Like, this city is just like, listen, we haven't had enough success in football for you to rip it away from us. And I don't think there's anyone who would be comfortable with them moving on from Tyrod Taylor after a double-digit win season and
if
a playoff
got,
berth.
If they've got a rookie, you know, franchise guy on the bench for an extra year as a potential backup to that, I mean, we're talking a bit of fantasy land. To go 10-6 or 11-5 would be shocking. But if that happens, you're right. They can't move away from Tyrod, and they can
right.
sit back
and
say.
I don't think it's. I mean, it seems way out of the realm of possibility, but I just don't think it's actually that far out there. You know, I mean, I think 8-8 is realistic. I think somewhere between 8-8, 9-7, 7-9 is probably where they land. But listen, you get a couple balls to bounce your way, you get a little bit of momentum at some point in time later, early in the season, whatever. The Browns won 10 games with Derek Anderson.
Yeah, and more importantly, last year their quarterback turned the ball over 28 times.
Right.
Tyrod Taylor, in his 3 years as a Bills quarterback, turned it over 18. So they played a lot of close games, and I was ready for the Bills to move on from Tyrod. You and I have had this discussion many times. But that was because of his ceiling, not his flaws. You know, the overall Browns team is probably going to be substantially better than anything Tyrod had to deal with the Bills, probably on both sides of the ball. I mean, regardless of what you say about their coaching situation, they're going to have 3 years of stockpiled early draft talent, and Tyrod will have offensive skill talent around him that he's never seen before. The retirement of Joe Thomas, to me, kind of sucks because it would have been nice if he had had one more year to stick around for a team that might have actually been good. But I respect his decision to hang up the Spurs. Having said that, it could be a really interesting year. I mean, I have a bet with my friend Ben about the Browns winning six or more, and I get a bottle of whiskey out of it. So I'm betting on Tyrod and me getting whiskey.
Yeah, I pretty much make all the bets for whiskey anymore.
Understood. We're not betting dinners and political stuff. All right, man. We're almost at 50 minutes, and I want to get to your team and mine.
Okay. So you talked about you taking the Bills taking Josh Allen.
If he falls that far, yes. And again, I'd prefer Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson, but if Josh Allen falls to 12, the Bills go there. And now let's do the fun part for you. You've heard me do a draft night meltdown twice. If the Bills trade a ton of stuff to get Josh Allen at anywhere between 6 and 2 in the draft, I will lose my fucking mind, and I will save some kind of rant for the podcast for entertainment / posterity's sake. Anyway, I will lose my mind. My hope is the Bills stay at 12, draft the quarterback that they believe is the best choice there, whether it's Josh Allen, whether it's Mason Rudolph, whether it's Lamar Jackson. I think one of those three will definitely be around at 12. And to give up, I've seen projections with them giving up 4 or 5 picks, including 2 firsts, a second this year, and a first next year to get Josh Rosen, and I will go fucking crazy if that happens. I turn the floor over to you, sir.
So we'll see.
You're hoping for that, aren't you?
No, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess it'll be interesting to see the direction that they go. You know, I mean, I really don't have a dog in this particular fight. So, I mean, I hope for your sake your team drafts the best player. But if they don't, you go, you know, nuclear, then, you know, I mean, there's that.
Oh, I see, you know, through you, my friend.
You know, I had the Bills taking, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, you were telling me before.
We stocked up a defensive tackle over the offseason, yes.
Just stop cutting me off, bro. Like, Jesus Christ, let me finish a goddamn sentence. You were talking and you mentioned how they had signed a defensive tackle from Carolina. I, not realizing that, I had them taking VA out of Washington, who's a big run stuffing athletic, you know, Dean lineman, who would fill that role. So that's who I have them taking, and I'd have to redo my whole draft order to figure out where he might end up now since they still have him. But I still actually don't think that would be a terrible, terrible spot for him, because whoever they got, like, I mean, he didn't pop up on my radar. So, I'm sure he's swell, but I don't know.
Interestingly, I have him falling one spot to the 13 at Washington. So I respect his talent. Just, I don't
right.
know the Bills.
And, I mean,
he
and then I also have, I mean, and I have, you know, the Redskins taking Daron Payne out of Alabama.
Okay.
Who's another big D tackle. So, I mean, I think we're on the same page there. And then you jump down to who I have the Steelers taking. I have the Steelers taking Leighton Vander Esch out of Boise State. Just fast, speedy linebacker who, you know, the Steelers have to be looking at the reality that Ryan Shazier is definitely not going to be back next year. And you hope for his sake that he's able to come back. But as an organization and as a team and as a business, you have to look at the reality that Ryan Shazier probably will not play football again. And you just have to kind of deal with that, and you're going to have to deal with it through the draft, as the Steelers don't do a lot in free agency, as their salary cap has been a nightmare for the last 5 years. So, you know, Xander Esch is fast. He's smart. He does overrun some plays, but again, that's kind of the same problem that we had with Shazier early on, but eventually he kind of learned how to control that some and became a really forceful player in that Steeler 3-4 defense. So I could see them. I could see Xander Esch, like the way I've kind of got this draft falling and the way I've seen it falling, I see Xander Esch kind of lasting to that point. Some people have the Steelers taking Ben Roethlisberger's replacement, whether it's Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson, or you know, depending on who's there. I don't think the Steelers are going to do that. I think Ben is committed to playing another couple years after this season. So I think that they're going to hold off on that in this particular draft and try to get, you know, try to fill the holes that the team needs so they can make a run within the next year or two, really past the, you know, they have to get through the Patriots to get to that next level. And I think that they kind of see their time in their window. Realistically, I think they see it closing. So I think they're going to do everything they can to do that now. And then they'll worry about a quarterback. If they do grab one, they'll draft a quarterback maybe later in the draft, but I doubt it. You know, I mean, you've got Landry Jones there for another year, and you've got Josh Dobson, who they drafted out of Tennessee. I could see them staying away from quarterback this year and just really going for holes and special teams in this draft.
Well, I had the Steelers taking Mason Rudolph late, and I actually had the Bills taking Xander Esch at 22 because the Bills lost their middle linebacker to free agency. And like you, I see him as just a guy who has some flaws, but has so much athletic talent that it's really attractive. I mean, I've only watched highlights. I did not watch a single Boise State game, but I've read enough and listened to enough and watched the highlight films and said, man, this guy just has sideline to sideline game. And, you know, it's totally cliche, but if, you know, as a Bills fan, Sean McDermott had Luke Kuechly at Carolina, and he seems like a Luke Kuechly, Urlacher type, just sideline to sideline, athletic as hell, get there. And yeah, he'll probably run himself out of some plays, but seems very appealing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, and that'll be the appeal. I mean, I we'll see. I hope he's there for the Steelers. If not, we'll see what direction they go. You know, the only other note I have is I have Lamar Jackson going to the New England Patriots at 31. I mean, I think that would be an interesting sort of splash for the Patriots to make, since Tom Brady wants to play until he's 50. Rob Gronkowski came out today and said that he's going to go ahead and play
right
in the 2018 season, which, I mean, I think we all kind of anticipated. His body has taken a beating, but I think he will be kind of sitting out some of the preliminary stuff to kind of get healed up. And then, you know, he'll be there sometime early to mid to late training camp, and be his normal ogre of a human that he is. And you know, give me nightmares because I just don't know how you stop him, because we just don't have a good way to defend him.
And either does anybody else. I mean, he is
right.
A
no,
nightmare.
I mean, nobody does. I mean, unless Tom Brady just opts to, you know, because the Patriots love to outsmart everybody, and I think they've kind of they're not quite doing that as much. You know, where they say, all right, we'll give this running back that no one ever heard of,
right,
you know, 50 carries a game, and he'll, you know, he'll score 30 fantasy points, and then we'll not only never give him another carry, but we'll cut him from the team 2 games later, and then we'll throw heavy to Rob Gronkowski this game, and then we won't throw a pass to Gronkowski for 2 games, and then, you know, we'll focus on, you know, whatever small white receiver we have this week, And then we'll, you know, blow him up for a couple games, and then we'll go back to Gronk. And it's almost like, you know, like, I mean, they do it on purpose, right? The Patriot way, no players bigger than Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And then, you know, but the Eagles kind of got him a little bit. And so, it's always nice to see them knock down a peg.
Well, it's kind of funny because I have the Patriots taking Lamar Jackson with their first round pick at 23, and then at 31 drafting Mike Gesicki, a tight end out of Penn State, who would seem to be the closest thing to the next version of Gronk. So,
yeah, you know, and that's a good call. And actually, I probably should have put Gesicki. He's probably gonna. I don't know. I probably should have put him at New Orleans at 27.
To fill the hole left by Jimmy Graham years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Graham was gone a couple of years now, but I mean, I think that's probably a better, you know, if you're really doing it. But it had started to get late, and I was fading on juice. So, you know, I was going through my top 50 players, but you're absolutely right. So, I don't know, man. I did enjoy this. I did enjoy putting it together. I enjoyed our discussion. So, I mean, obviously, we're about to do the same thing next year. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the draft kind of plays out, especially the first round, and see, you know, kind of who goes where and how close we were. I mean, things can go haywire pretty quick on draft night. So
no doubt,
you know, I mean, this could be one of those things by after the first five picks, our whole, you know, you crumple it up, throw it away and just say, all right, well, let's just enjoy the show.
Right. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. I'll publish it tomorrow. I will be back in town late Thursday on draft round one of draft night. The fun thing is we'll get to watch round one unfold before our eyes, or at least while we're both in the same town, if we're not able to get together for a drink. But I've enjoyed this a lot too. Always like talking sports with you, man. Sometimes we get too deep into politics and other stuff. So I had a good time. You want to close out with anything, sports, politics, or whiskey wise?
No, let's avoid that if possible. The whole politics thing. No, and I'm out of whiskey, so, no,
me too.
Watch
I had none to start.
Yeah. We'll try, you know, maybe we'll try to get together or something like that and compare notes on the draft and go from there, but it was enjoyable and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks again, brother. Enjoyed it. Later.